Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the fifth and last class in the Discovering Buddhism module, Taking Refuge in the Three Jewels. Let's see, do we have anyone who's here for the first time tonight? Okay, so we're all experienced meditators. So we'll begin, we'll start with some meditation as usual, and then I'm going to pass out the text to a very simple refuge practice, and we'll go through that. Is this too loud? Okay. And then if there are any questions, and then we'll finish the course. So, I'll take that one out. Okay, so begin by checking your posture. Back a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Head straight on your shoulders. Eyes either lightly closed or just very slightly open. Lips also lightly closed, not clenched. Shoulders are down. And back a little bit, so your chest is a little bit open. Upper arms away from the sides of your torso, so some air can pass through there. And hands can either be one hand on each knee, or right hand with the thumbs touching slightly below the navel. If you're on a cushion, you should be sitting a little bit towards the front of the cushion. And your legs are crossed in any position that you find comfortable and non-distracting. If you're sitting in a chair, your feet should either be flat on the floor or resting on a cushion. So begin by checking the posture, starting from the top of your head, working down, checking for any signs of discomfort or stress or strain, and trying to address them now so that once we begin the actual meditation, the posture is just self-maintaining. It doesn't really take any effort. And we'll begin with a very simple version of the nine rounds in breathing. There are lots of different ones. Geshe-la teaches one on Sunday morning. It's slightly different, but they're all meant to use the ability that we have by controlling our breath to somewhat stabilize our mind. It certainly doesn't do all the work, but it helps us a little bit. And actually, physiologically, what we're doing during these deep breaths is we're stimulating the vagus nerve, which actually does slightly slow down our heart rate and slow down our breathing. So on these breaths, we want the stomach to expand on the in-breath so that our diaphragm is being pulled down and our lungs completely expand. And then on the out-breath, stomach is pulled back towards our spine. The diaphragm moves up, and the lungs completely empty. So first we'll do three deep breaths. Excuse me. In and out through the right nostril. Three in and out through the left nostril. And then three in and out through both nostrils. And you can do that at your own pace. And now we allow our breathing to return to its natural rhythm. And as always, we begin the meditation by setting our motivation. As much as possible, we generate the bodhicitta motivation that we're here tonight doing this meditation and discussing and talking about the Dharma to make a positive imprint on our mind that will allow us to be of greater benefit to all sentient beings. And that includes ourself, our family, our friends, our co-workers, all the animals we know, all the people that we don't even know, everyone. There's an attitude of equanimity, that we realize that the greatest thing is to be of benefit to all people equally, all living beings, not just the ones that we're emotionally close to, but all living beings. So take a moment and generate that motivation. And having set our motivation, we now begin our actual meditation. The chosen object of the meditation is the breath, the physical, tactile sensation of breath moving in and out through our nostrils. We just very simply place our awareness on that sensation. Breath moving in and out, mind perceiving breath moving in and out, so that there's no discursive thought, just direct experience of breath, mind perceiving breath, nothing more than that. And when we notice our mind's wandered, when it's perceiving something else, as it inevitably will, we just set that aside and come back to the breath over and over. And we can end our meditation with a dedication in which we acknowledge the positive energy that we've created. And dedicate that to the benefit of all sentient beings. Okay, you can, move around. Any questions or comments about the meditation? Are people feeling they're getting a little better at it with practice? Or do you feel like you're getting worse? More aware of how distracted your mind is. Not uncommon. Okay. Tonight, we're going to go through a very simple refuge practice. It's in this book, Refuge in the Three Jewels, that's for sale in the bookstore. And it's a very good reference if you've taken refuge and not quite sure what you've gotten yourself into. It outlines the commitments. And it's also a good reference if you're thinking about taking refuge and you want to know what you're getting into. Because, as I said, the refuge... You're allowed to study the refuge commitments before you take them. So there are two pages. You pass these out so everybody gets a copy of each one. Thank you. At the what? Oh. Well, I'm going to read it out loud, okay? Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, go ahead. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so as most people have figured out, it's four pages. If you put them back to back and fold it in half, they'll be in the right order. So I'll just read through the text and give a few comments. And if you have questions about anything, please stop me if it's not clear. And then we'll read through it together. Taking refuge in the three jewels, a short daily practice of taking refuge, how to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha in order to be completely liberated from suffering and its causes. So the implication is really that the practice of taking refuge is a necessary step if we wish to be liberated from suffering. This is not the... If you take an actual refuge ceremony, if you participate, the text is going to be more elaborate. But this is a practice you can do after you've taken refuge on a daily basis or weekly basis or however. It's just a simple practice you can incorporate into your daily meditation practice if you'd like to. And you'll notice the prayers here at Kadampa Center or any other Tibetan Buddhist center, the prayers that they do before teachings are going to be extremely varied. There's no party line on which prayers you need to do at which time. It's more the inclination of the resident teachers and the members of that center as to which prayers are done. But there's generally going to be some version of this refuge and bodhicitta prayer. You'll notice that we always include that here at Kadampa Center, the first four lines. Sometimes we do it in English. Sometimes we do it in Tibetan. Which is the Tibetan version of the same thing. So taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is... Somebody knows what bodhicitta is. Yeah, that's what... Yeah, but what does it refer to? Yeah, it's the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others. Okay, so it's really two parts. The wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others, not just for personal liberation, but for the benefit of all. Okay, bodhicitta. It's a very great quality. It's not enlightenment, but it's a very close step to enlightenment. So, it says, I go for refuge until I am enlightened. Implication being that when you're enlightened, you don't have to go for refuge anymore, okay? Enlightenment being the state of becoming a Buddha. So until I get there, I go for refuge. It's a continual practice. It's not just a one-time ceremony. To the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. That's the Sangha. We're familiar with that. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Does anybody know what the perfections are? There's six of them, six qualities that we develop as part of our on our path to become a Buddha.
Morality, ethics.
Ethics is one. Generosity, patience. Third, concentration. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ethics, generosity, patience. Joyful effort, calm abiding or concentration, and wisdom, insight into reality. And they're called perfections because they're all done with this mind of bodhicitta. So they're not just good qualities, but they're good qualities that are perfected by being combined with bodhicitta. So we develop bodhicitta, we practice the six perfections, and those are the steps right before we become a Buddha, it said. We perfect our six perfections. We get them so we're just perfect at all six of those. So by practicing those, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Okay, that's the bodhicitta wish. Yeah. Right. Now, I haven't heard that, but I've heard different explanations of what they need to be perfected. The most commonly given one is bodhicitta, but it makes sense, yeah, that they all include each other. Yeah, okay. So that's the bodhicitta wish. And typically that prayer is said three times because we know as one of our refuge commitments, we're supposed to go for refuge three times during the day and three times during the night. So if you come to Kadampa Center on Sunday morning and say that, you know, you've knocked off your three times for the day, you just have to remember to do it three more times before you go to bed. Okay? Then the prayer of the four immeasurables. That's another commonly used prayer, and there are different forms of it. There's one in the prayer book that's just one line for each immeasurable. These are four immeasurable wishes, immeasurably great. Immeasurably all-encompassing, immeasurably vast. So we'd say the prayer of the four immeasurables. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were to abide in equanimity, free from hatred and attachment, not holding some close and others distant. Equanimity is a term you hear a lot. It's this getting away from dividing sentient beings up into those I like and those I don't like and those I don't care about. It doesn't mean that we become indifferent to all of them, but we see them as all equally close to ourselves, equally worthy of being free from suffering, and equally possessing the potential to become enlightened. That really, the person who's the closest to us in the world and the person we dislike the most are much more alike in those ways than they are different. And usually the differences are going to have a good bit of our own projection in it, not something that exists inherently out there. So we start to develop this sense of equanimity, where we feel equally close to everyone, not close in a clinging or needy sort of way, but close in an interdependent way. And we're saying, how great it would be if everyone could develop that quality. That's the first immeasurable, the wish that others have equanimity. And then we kind of finish off by saying, may they abide in equanimity. I myself will cause them to abide in equanimity. This is what's referred to as taking responsibility. Not that we actually can do that, okay? We're not gods. That's not in our ability. But we're developing the mind that aspires to do that, that would do it if it were possible, taking personal responsibility for others. And then we say, please, Guru Deity, bless me to be able to do this. And by Guru Deity, this is getting into the more complicated version of the relationship with the guru, where you see your personal guru as being indistinguishable from the Buddha, from the enlightened being. And that's not something that people should jump into, you know, seeing the first. That's a very complicated practice, and it's fraught with dangers or possibilities to go to one extreme or another. But they've included that in this version. And that's very typical of Lama Zopa, who wrote this, to talk about things in that way. But certainly, if you just want to read the first line and leave the other three out, that's completely acceptable. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and the causes of happiness. Okay. Anybody know what the definition of happiness is? This is something I didn't know till a couple of weeks ago when I had to look it up. You know, you think you know what it is. It's said to be an experience that is satisfying in and of itself and that we wish to repeat. Kind of a strange definition, or that's at least one definition. I'm not sure. It's an interesting definition. But an experience that is satisfying in and of itself and that we wish to encounter or experience again. But I think we all have an idea what happiness is. May they have happiness and its cause. I myself will cause them to have these. Please, Guru Deity, bless me to be able to do this. Okay. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free from suffering and its cause. Okay, what's that? That's compassion, the wish that others be from suffering. And based on an understanding of karma, okay, we add, we know that suffering is not just random, but there is a cause of suffering. Our past actions, negative actions of body, speech, and mind. In the same way, there's a cause of happiness in the previous one. Those qualities, if we want to be happy, we have to have its cause. If we want to be free from suffering, we have to be free from the cause of suffering. May they be free of suffering and its cause, and so on. And then how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were never separated from the happiness of higher rebirth and liberation. Okay? So that's really love, that people have ultimate happiness. Happiness of not being reborn in the lower realms, the more suffering realms, but being reborn in the higher rebirth and ultimately achieving liberation. Personal liberate freedom from suffering. Okay? The wish that others be happy is love in Tibetan Buddhism. Okay? So those are the four immeasurables. To wish that others have equanimity, happiness, be free from suffering, and have eternal happiness and achieve enlightenment. Okay? The four immeasurable wishes. Yeah, the wish that others... Oh, yeah. It's an experience that's satisfying in and of itself and that we wish to experience again. If it's satisfying means it's without that clinging. Our experience of it is without that clinging. Okay, like for example, a classic example of chocolate cake. After a certain point, you wouldn't want to experience that again. You know, if you just have chocolate cake after chocolate cake after chocolate cake, that's not satisfying in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Wish for happiness and the cause of happiness. I've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of love.
Yeah.
And then the wish to be free from suffering or never separated from happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Joy.
I've heard that said sometimes, yeah. But you don't hear that word used a lot, so I don't know. But I've heard that also, yeah. Okay. Then we have a little set our motivation for going for refuge. The purpose of my life is to free all sentient beings from every suffering and to lead them to happiness, especially the sublime, peerless happiness of full enlightenment. Okay? And it's interesting to use the words lead them to happiness. That, you know, you can't make someone happy, but you can help them, point them in the right direction, teach them, which is what the Buddha did. You know, he couldn't take away the suffering of others. He could just teach what he had learned. So we want to develop our minds so that we have enough compassion, enough wisdom that we can actually be a leader for other people in the path to happiness. We can't just make them happy by presto changeo, but we can help lead. Since the enjoyments in my everyday life, every past, present, and future happiness, including enlightenment, are dependent on other sentient beings, the happiness of these numberless sentient beings depends on me. So it's saying that everything we have comes from others. All our spiritual progress, all our opportunities to practice patience, to practice generosity, to practice compassion and love depends on others. These are not just abstract qualities. They have to be in relation to other people. We can't just, you know, kind of develop this abstract love without it being related to other people. Initially, we start with the people we're close to, then the people we're not so close to, and ultimately we spread it out so it includes all sentient beings. Without others, we could not achieve enlightenment. And it's said that, you know, sometimes they actually say others are the cause of our enlightenment. Okay, they give us the opportunity to develop these qualities. Without people pushing our buttons, you know, we wouldn't have any motivation or we wouldn't have any ability to grow spiritually. And so, similarly, we can think, again, this is just a way of thinking, you know, it's just try it on, that I take personal responsibility for the happiness of others. Not because I'm great or wonderful, but I want others to be happy. I'm taking that as my task in life. If I generate loving kindness towards sentient beings, then all sentient beings will receive no harm from me and instead will have peace and success. Therefore, I am responsible for all sentient beings' happiness and peace. I am a servant here to serve every sentient being, without discriminating between those who harm and those who help, whatever they do. Again, equanimity. For the success of this, I must achieve full enlightenment. Okay? The only way I can serve every sentient being is to become enlightened. That is the greatest gift the greatest good I can do for others is to develop my own qualities of compassion and wisdom. By getting my act together, it becomes possible for me to truly serve others. Lots of times we feel like we want to help, we don't know what to do, or other times we feel people are asking us to help and we just can't give anymore. We have to develop our wisdom and our compassion. For the success of this, I must achieve full enlightenment. Therefore, I'm going to put all the actions of my body, speech, and mind in virtue so that I can be of the greatest benefit to all sentient beings, which means to achieve enlightenment as quickly as possible. So not only do I want to become enlightened, but I want to do it as fast as possible because I know others are suffering and I want to help them. So I want all possible speed. The quicker, the better. May all these actions not cause the slightest harm, but bring only benefit to all sentient beings in the best way so that they too may as quickly as possible achieve enlightenment. Okay, so that's setting our motivation. Anybody have any questions or comments about that? Okay, and then as always we do a dedication. He says, it is best if possible to always dedicate the merit of any virtuous action right after doing it. So every time you do something virtuous, acknowledge it and put a little seal on it. Set that energy. If not, at least dedicate the merit of each day before going to bed. That's a really nice practice to do. Dedicate your own past, present, and future merit, and also that of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, all the other enlightened beings and people who have achieved bodhicitta. Said, it's not just your, you know, you get a lot of good karma just rejoicing in the merit that other, in the good actions of others. So if you saw somebody at work do something really kind, you know, rejoice in that. And that puts a positive imprint on your own mind stream. So then the dedication prayer. And again, we say some version of this usually at the end of teachings. Due to this merit, may I soon attain the enlightened state of a Guru Buddha, that I may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their sufferings. May the precious Bodhi mind, the great mind, the mind that wants to become enlightened for the benefit of others, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born, the Bodhi mind that already exists, have no decline but increase forevermore. May sentient beings who have all been my mother and father, based on a understanding of rebirth, be completely happy, and may the lower realms be forever empty. May nobody ever be reborn in the lower suffering realms. May all the prayers of the bodhisattvas in whatever places they live be immediately fulfilled. Whatever white virtues I have created, I dedicate as causes enabling me to uphold the holy dharma of scriptures and insights, and to fulfill without exception the prayers and deeds of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the three times, past, present, and future. By the force of this merit, may I never be parted in all my lives from the four wheels of the Mahayana vehicle. Mahayana is the type of Buddhism that's practiced in Tibet, China, Japan. It's often referred to as the greater vehicle. Because the goal is not just personal liberation, but the end of suffering for all living beings. I'm not quite sure what the four wheels of the vehicle refer to, if that's the same as the four turnings of the wheel of Dharma of the teachings of the Buddha, but it makes sense that it would be. Does anybody else know about that? Yeah. But the four wheels of wheels of Dharma by the Buddha were his initial teachings. And may I reach the end of the journey, enlightenment, along the paths of renunciation. Renunciation refers to the wish to be personally free of suffering. I don't want to suffer anymore. That's what motivates us to go for refuge. Bodhicitta, the wish to become enlightened so others don't suffer. the pure view, which means an understanding of emptiness, seeing reality as it is, and the two stages of tantric practice, the tantric practices being those at the end that I mentioned that remove the most subtle obscurations and karmic imprints that prevent complete enlightenment. Okay? Any questions or comments? Okay. So what I'd like to do is read this together. Is if you are not comfortable with parts of it, you don't have to read that part. If you've taken refuge, this is a good, nice practice to include in your practice occasionally. Like I say, this is not taking the refuge vows, the refuge commitments. You have to take refuge from a qualified teacher, but this gives you an idea. And this booklet after this includes a little explanation of the commitments, talks about the lay vows. We covered most of this, losing the vows, the downfalls, the benefits of practicing the vows. And then at the end, Lama Zopa included the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. But he inserted the word Buddha in a couple places. He amended it, yeah. So maybe I'll read that. Here, I'll just read it because people may be familiar with it. Starts off, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. And here it goes, Lord, in brackets, Buddha, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, unity. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is error, truth. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is sadness, joy. Where there is darkness, light. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled, and then in brackets he puts here, happiness for the ego, as to console. Grant that I may not be so much seek to be consoled, happiness for the ego, as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. It is in dying, and then he puts in brackets here, having practiced, that we are born to eternal life. And then he puts in brackets, from happiness to happiness up to full enlightenment. And then he adds, may all beings effortlessly attain the transcendent blissful state of omniscient Buddhahood. So, okay. So let's read together the Taking Refuge in Bodhicitta three times, the Prayers of the Four Immeasurables, and then we can get to the motivation for life. I'll read that while you meditate on the meaning of it. I'll do some pauses in there, and then we can read the dedication together. Okay. Taking Refuge in Generating Bodhicitta. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And now the prayer of the Four Immeasurables. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were to abide in equanimity, free from hatred and attachment, not holding some close and others distant. May they abide in equanimity. I myself will cause them to abide in equanimity. Please, Guru Deity, bless me to be able to do this. Now let's just pause here for a moment and meditate on that one, the wish for equanimity. how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and the causes of happiness. May they have happiness and its cause. I myself will cause them to have these. Please, Guru Deity, bless me to be able to do this. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were free from suffering and its cause. May they be free of suffering and its cause. I myself will cause them to be free from suffering and its cause. Please, Guru Deity, bless me to be able to do this. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings were never separated from the happiness of higher rebirth and liberation. May they never be separated from these. I myself will cause them never to be separated from these. Please, Guru Deity, bless me to be able to do this. And now I'll read the motivation for life, and you can think about the meaning. The purpose of my life is to free all sentient beings from every suffering and to lead them to happiness, especially the sublime, peerless happiness of full enlightenment. Since the enjoyments in my everyday life, every past, present, and future happiness, including enlightenment, are dependent on other sentient beings, the happiness of these numberless sentient beings depends on me. If I generate loving kindness towards sentient beings, then all sentient beings will receive no harm from me, and instead will have peace and success. Therefore, I am responsible for all sentient beings' happiness and peace. I am a servant here to serve every sentient being without discriminating between those who harm and those who help. Whatever they do. For the success of this, I must achieve full enlightenment. Therefore, I am going to put all the actions of my body, speech, and mind in virtue so that I can be of the greatest benefit to all sentient beings, which means to achieve enlightenment as quickly as possible. May all these actions not cause the slightest harm, but bring only benefit to all sentient beings in the best way, so that they too may as quickly as possible achieve enlightenment. Now we can read the dedication together. Due to this merit, may I soon attain the enlightened state of a Guru Buddha, that I may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their sufferings. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. May sentient beings who have all been my mother and father be completely happy, and may the lower realms be forever empty. May all the prayers of the bodhisattvas for places they live be immediately fulfilled. Whatever white virtues I have created, I dedicate as causes, enabling me to uphold the holy dharma of scriptures and insights, and to fulfill without exception the prayers and deeds of all the Buddhas and bodhisattvas of the three times. By the force of this merit, may I never be parted in all my lives from the four wheels of the Mahayana vehicle, and may I reach the end of the journey of renunciation, bodhicitta, pure view, and the two stages of tantric practice. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Technically, a bodhisattva has not achieved full enlightenment, okay, but has completely developed bodhicitta, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others. That quality is constantly present in the mind of a bodhisattva, never disappearing for a minute, but they're not a Buddha. They're not completely wise and completely compassionate yet, but very close. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There. It's It's a prayer where you pray to different Buddhas, and you know whether they actually lived or not, who knows, or they may be future Buddhas or past, but they all, each one embodies a different, is seen as a different aspect of enlightenment, even though they're all Buddhas. Yeah, I'm not really qualified to talk about something like that. Just talk to a Geshe about that one. Yeah. Any other? What do people think about prayers in Buddhism? Who are we praying to? What's the point of prayers in Buddhism? Anybody? I mean, there's no right answer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Think of Dharma and keep those things in my mind.
Yeah.
God in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
That way I'm praying so that I can get enlightened.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a direct transmission when I pray for somebody, but it certainly helps me. I'm being beneficial to others by thinking about them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a pretty good explanation. Yeah, the word that is used a lot in terms to Buddhist prayer is that it's an aspiration. We're giving words to what we aspire to become.
Recently, about prayer, I pray, of course, because I'm Buddhist.
Uh-huh.
But for the good that it does, it would be good for me to just get up and do good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That's good to remember. If you can do it, go ahead and do it. If you can just aspire to do it, then you can do prayers. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Yeah. I think that just refers to any virtues. Yeah, it's kind of redundant the way I think of it. Yeah, I'm not really can't say why they use the word white there. Yeah, I don't think there are any black virtues or negative virtues. Yeah. Okay. So that is the end of the class. If you are doing it for credit, which means you're going to do all the modules, and then you will get a certificate from the FPMT, and then you will be qualified to sit up here and lead these classes. And we really need some people to get qualified. I'd like you to fill out a completion form indicating that you've been to all the classes or seen them online or listened to the recordings, done the meditation and the reading. And then there is an essay question to be turned in 1 month from today. Not the next time I teach a class. And you can put these in my box, which is my mail slot out there. So just take these if you're going to, or if you want to do them, even if you're not planning on getting the certificate, if you'd like to do this, great. And I'm going to let Scott make an announcement.
Just a quick announcement. And people who come to these classes all the time, of course, hear this again and again, but you also know why we say it again and again. For a while. Just a reminder that everything we do here at Kadampa Center is done on a donation-only basis. We don't get any outside funding at all. And we have wonderful people like Robbie who volunteer to teach the classes as much as we'd like to give them.
What? I'm not getting paid? They told me I was going to get paid.
I'm not going to run with that one. So anyway, just like everybody else, we have a lot of people helping out, helping these classes happen. And, of course, we have to pay. These people who aren't volunteering are power company and our bank with the mortgage and all those, so we do have bills to pay, which is why we ask for donations. If you care to make a donation, of course, we have the donation boxes outside. And also remember, you can donate online. I know a lot of people don't, you know, carry cash around these days. We do have opportunities on our website to make donations if you are so inclined. So that's it. And we have, if anybody wants to stick around, we have the discussion groups. Usually people stick around after every class. A couple of us are going to be resetting the Gompa for the puja tomorrow night. But if anybody wants to stick around and have a discussion afterwards, the table is out there and the opportunity is there to do that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, please remember there's no Discovering Buddhism next Monday night. There'll probably be some people here, but no class. And I'm not sure when the next module starts. Does anybody know? The schedule's a little iffy for the rest of the summer. So just stay tuned. And it's the Venerable Chickies here. She may know. And thank you very much. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. And be careful driving out. The traffic pattern here is impermanent. It is change. It's different every time you come. But do not try and take a right-hand turn going out of here. So, and if you want the forms, there's two of those to take. Okay. I may have to run off some more if a lot of people want them. I didn't think everybody would take them.